Just like Olive Garden, when you're here, your family, we saw Fast 9, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, cause you know you won that. How Did This Get Made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? Boy, oh boy, summer is here, and this is the movie that has brought back the blockbuster. It has broken all the records, and it has also brought back the How Did This Get Made family. That's right, we are doing a full-on all-star How Did This Get Made. The team that has been around for most of the Fast and Furious films are back again today. But if you've not seen Fast 9, let me tell you where we are, what we're going into very quickly. At 145 minutes, it is the longest one in the franchise. Mm-hmm. Justin Lin, the director, has returned. He was directed 4, 5, and 6. When we last left the gang, they're on a rooftop in New York City. Cypher is on the loose. Dom has a baby by Elsa, who is dead, that he renames Brian in the final scene. The coast is clear. The gang is free. Everything is A-OK. Everyone is living their best life. But 9 picks up a bit more tense. Dom and Letty are on a farm. They hear that Mr. Nobody has been captured. The team needs them to find him. And, oh, Dom also has a brother who we've never heard mentioned in the 8 previous films, and magnets. That's pretty much what you need to know as we get into this film. And as always, I cannot break this film down without my two co-hosts. Please welcome Jason Mantzoukas and June Diane Raphael. How are you both?
Oh, this made my summer. This really was exciting. This made me very happy. If anything, you said it was the longest one, not long enough.
It flew by. Wow. Flew by.
Not long enough.
You know, that's interesting. So this is the first time I've been to a movie theater.
Same.
And Paul and I, yeah, we saw the movie in a dark theater in the middle of the day with our masks on. There was one other patron.
Love it.
And yeah, and it was a wonderful way to re-enter the theatrical experience.
To be embraced like family.
Yeah.
Back into the cinematic family.
It felt right. It felt like exactly where we should
like a big, warm Vin Diesel hug.
So big, so warm. I will say this much. The person who was in the theater left before the post-credit scene, which we'll get into, which allowed June and I to dance our way out of the theater.
The music was on.
Ooh, movie theater dance party. Music, we were dancing our way up the aisles. We were dancing in the seats, and we danced our way out of the theater.
Yeah, that's what we got. And you know what? I am dancing right here in my chair because we have a very special guest. Like I said, he is part of the How Did This Get Made Fast and Furious family. Please welcome Mr. Adam Scott. Adam, welcome back.
Oh my God, you guys. This movie, and I like you guys, this is the first time I'd been to a theater in, what, 14 months? Is that?
Yeah,
yes. Easily.
Yeah.
And there is not a better movie to return to the theater for.
Oh, truly.
And I just have to say, going to the movies is so awesome.
Yes.
And I really missed it.
For spectacle. And what we're all looking for is spectacle. And that's what I think Fast 9 smartly, you know, like they really were like, because this movie was supposed to come out right as the pandemic hit. Like, this movie was imminent.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was imminent. Like, the final trailers were being released. It was
going to be the summer blockbuster. Like, everything shut down in March. This is going to be the one that launched the summer. Like, the first movie of May or
and
whatever.
And so they basically punted.
The movie didn't, like, cause the pandemic or anything.
Oh, now that's interesting.
Right?
Now that's interesting.
That's up for debate. Maybe we figure it out here today.
Because I know they've been saying, like, you know, it was monkey to human or, you know, animal to human, but
do you think it was stunt,
no way it was
stunt to monkey and then monkey to human?
There were scenes shot in Wuhan. There was there is a set piece in a wet market that was edited out of the movie.
We joke about it, but we know, truthfully, if the Fast and Furious gang could have prevented this pandemic, they would have done it in the final second. So they, it would have gotten so close.
Here's what I'll say. Yeah. If given the chance, if given the choice, rather, to have the Trump administration be in charge of the COVID response or the Fast and Furious team be in charge of the COVID response, they would drive around handing out the vaccine to everybody. I wish that the Toretto family was in charge of the CDC.
I would take Ludacris
and Roman and Tyrese.
Roman in charge of the COVID response any day the week.
Sure. And you know they're all vaxxed. I mean, you know they're all fully vaxxed. It's just so like them.
Jason and I were talking about this, and we felt like the fact that Fauci wasn't in this at all really was, it felt to me like we needed a cameo where he, you know, tipped his hat. Maybe he's working with Mr. Nobody. I feel like Fauci can be part of the Fast and Furious family
now. Nothing
would
make me happier than like Fauci. They have to like break Fauci out of like Charlize has captured Fauci and they're like, we gotta go get Fauci. Look, Fauci's family.
They literally put Bill Simmons, the Ringer podcaster, sports writer, in the movie as part of the pit crew. Fauci could be in that pit crew too. Oh, guys, you really shouldn't be.
Wait, was Bill Simmons in that in the pit crew?
Yes, is he really? In the flashback. This is for us. This is second movie in a row for us with Michael Rooker in it.
Sixth day,
last week's episode or whatever, episode we did. And this, Michael Rooker, Yondu from Guardians of the Galaxy, coming in, again, one of our great character actors. We haven't talked about it yet, but this movie starts with a flashback to young Dom, and we get to see his father, and his father's racing, I don't know, is it NASCAR racing?
Well, I think it's a little lower
seemed like a regional
small scale, but like nonetheless deadly, because as we watch, his father gets killed.
I mean, that car was straight up made out of gasoline. I mean, when it hit,
it exploded
in such a way that it was as if the car was covered in gasoline and there was a match thrown by it. I understand that they talked about this idea like it could ignite immediately, but that car
exploded.
You could tell they were like, this car needs to explode in such a way that there is no question that the person inside of it is dead.
Although I would not be surprised at all if in 10, Papa Toretto shows up.
Oh.
100%.
Okay, Sylvester Stallone as Papa Toretto. That's my pitch.
100%.
Okay, I have to talk about something. And that is the flashback sequence and the actor who's playing young John Cena, Dom's little brother, Jonah. What's his name?
Jacob. Is it Jacob?
Jacob. Is so much shorter than young Dom. But then when we see them in adulthood, John Cena is so clearly quite a bit taller.
It's so fascinating.
It's outrageous.
Now, I'm going to say something else. If you watch the movie again, notice in scenes.
Have you seen this movie more than once, Jason?
No, I haven't. But I think that, like, I'm just going to point something out that only because if you get a chance to watch it again. They're also at times using forced perspective to show Vin Diesel being taller than other characters well.
They're using Lord of the Rings technology here.
Like there's
they're
a scene with
him
and Letty where he and Letty are standing in the doorway like of Thanos. A building and he's like 6 inch standing. It doesn't look like it, but he's standing higher than her. And when they both exit, he has to exit weirdly because he's on something that is like a lift. They're constantly trying to they're retconning him as a tall man by casting a tall man as his younger self. It's fascinating.
It's really very crazy to see them in those flashbacks because they are, I mean, I would say little brother Jacob is 18, 19, but you're at your full height.
Yeah, he didn't have a growth spurt at 22.
Not like, possible. Yeah. Or we have to assume that like Dom shrunk somehow.
Yeah.
Prison?
They might have, or they...
Bad nutrition in prison?
One of them shrunk and one of them grew.
I was wondering why they had other actors portray, because it's a while ago, but it's not like they're toddlers.
I thought they were meant to be like teenagers, but they clearly are not. The actors are not teenagers. So.
I have a theory on this.
Oh, interesting.
I have a theory on this.
The actors look like they're like 25.
That's right.
So, yeah. My theory is they want to spin off Fast and Furious into like a TV show or a movie and use those two characters pre-dad's
death. I thought those guys were great.
Well,
they were
also great. Because in the flashback, when Dom gets out of jail, you also see young Mia, young Letty. You see young analogs for all of the main characters. And so they could do like origin story Fast and Furious movies like Paul is saying, with those actors as the young, the 20-something, young 20-something versions of the team.
Which I am there for.
I'm all in. And I will say, though, Adam, to your point, I did want Little Man technology on these, you know, Little Man, the classic Wayans Brothers films where they just put an adult head on a baby. I wanted that for Vin.
It's been great. But Michael Rooker was in the flashbacks just with a super weird wig on.
Yeah.
By the way.
And then...
Wait, by the way, the first scene of the movie takes place in 89 or 99?
89.
Because then the first movie is 2001.
10 years later, right?
All right. That's a lot of aging. They both did a lot of aging in that time.
Well, I mean, like Vin Diesel loses all of his hair. He's bald by the time he's, you know.
I have a theory about this. If you were to ask Vin Diesel, like, are you a bald man? He would say no.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I believe there are certain, I can speak as a bald man, that there are certain bald men who don't believe that they're bald, that they just shave their head by choice. Uh-huh. Like, they have convinced themselves. I'm not bald.
I choose to shave it off.
Right. And there is a...
This movie franchise, here's what I'll say. This movie franchise has the highest number of bald men in lead roles out of anything we've ever seen in history.
Which makes me furious because I'm finally like, get me in there, guys.
You have to get in there because almost everybody, especially not this movie because he's not in it, but The Rock, when The Rock was in it, when Statham was in it,
and
like Tyrese.
Let's talk about it. Statham is in it.
Oh, sorry. Statham is in it, the tag. But you know what I mean? Like this, you look at it.
I did not see this tag. I don't even know what that is.
Okay. We can get to it at the end.
But no bald women.
Now that's interesting. Isn't that interesting?
That is true. Although Charlize's hair is shorter.
Charlize has that haircut, which I'm into.
I like that haircut. I like the way that they... Well, I mean, there's so much going on with this character. And I mean, I want to even bring it out to the fact that what I really was having trouble with was... how did Fast 8 end, the Fate and the Furious? I was like, how did that end? And I went back and rewatched it. It seems like shit has worked out. Like, The Rock gets his badge and gun back. They're in New York. Things are
Vin
good. They
gets
don't
his
mention.
Son.
Yeah. And now when we open up on this movie, they're on a farm and they're freaked the fuck out that someone is going to kill them. And I was like, what has transpired? Because when they make that kid jump into the cellar,
that was kind of terrifying.
Brian, go. Yeah. And Brian has aged a lot. Brian has gone from baby
later.
To like,
yeah, he's like 30 now.
Adam, your numbers, numbers.
Yeah, I'm a little off numbers wise today, guys, but I think I'm in the right zone. They never explain through the whole movie why they were so freaked out at the beginning. Am I right about that?
They just saw a normal car. Nothing was intimidating. It's like a Toyota is coming down the road.
Here's the thing.
Get the fuck in here.
I think there are still people out in the world who want them dead.
Who?
Okay.
I mean, Cypher.
That's the thing.
I mean, Cypher, because Cypher escaped, right?
Right, but do you think that Cypher's coming after Dom?
Probably.
I think she's going to come after Statham.
She completely, that was Dom's orders.
Okay.
You know? You know, like, that was Dom's plan was to act, because Deckard at the end, Statham at the end says, how did you know I'd do it? You know, and he's like, you know, family.
I think this is sort of why this movie, as much as I loved it and loved going to the theater and loved any Fast and Furious movie, and would take it and go see it again any day of the week. This one, just this, like, the fact that they're freaked out at the beginning, we never quite know why. I found myself in that first terrific sequence, kind of out in the jungle.
Yeah.
I found myself in that same place that I was, like, with Star Wars prequels or Indiana Jones 4, where I'm like, this is fun, but who's chasing them and why and what are they?
And usually
these movies are so good at setting up the big bad, the big cartoony conflict that's going to carry us for this movie. It's all always so expertly and clearly stated right at the beginning, and we know clearly where we're going. And this one, I was
with you, Adam. Couldn't quite figure
it out.
Well,
this, yeah.
I didn't know why Charlize was in the box.
Well, yeah.
Well, she was on the question plane a couple times.
Yeah, that's okay. So Mr. Nobody had managed to capture Charlize,
which and had she her was uncaptured at the end of the last movie. He's like, we believe she's in Athens. So they Mr. Nobody is continuing his quest to take down Cypher, Charlize. Cypher,
exactly. And manages to and puts her in like a classic Magneto.
No, he doesn't do that.
Oh, you think that...
I think John Cena puts her in that cell.
You think John Cena? Oh, okay, okay, got it.
John Cena and the
John Cena and his buddy.
And that's his setup. Oh, okay. I thought he's... in my mind, there was a set piece prior to the movie where John Cena... In Fast and Furious fashion, John Cena steals the box, the clear Lucite box with Charlize in it out of the plane. But you're right. He probably just took Charlize and made that box and
put
her
in. By the way,
that
box that Charlize is in has no seats. She has to stand in a prison cell. Like the only thing in that box besides the lasers going around her box is a drawer that they can pass her documents in, but there's no place to sit, there's no bed, and I just really started to feel for her. I was like, how embarrassing to be on display in front of all these military jerks, and then you can't even sit down, you've got to lean the entire time.
Well,
I mean,
at first, right, because you don't want to sit on the floor. She looked great in the box. But the thing is, like, so when I first saw her in that box, I was like, oh, it's not a cell. It's a protective layer. Like, I thought she was in, like, a Pope Mobile type thing.
And
I
was like a bulletproof kind of.
Yes, she's in a bulletproof, like, they have to protect her.
I thought it was weird that, because it's, again, if you haven't seen it, it's like a perfectly transparent, like a glass, Lucite, bulletproof box.
Very Magneto.
I thought the one weird thing that was weird was that it was a completely clear, transparent toilet that was in there. I thought that was uncalled for. I didn't like that. I just thought that was
long
weird.
Scene where we're with her the entire time she goes to the bathroom.
Yeah, and she's like, can I get a magazine? Can I get something?
Yeah.
And you just see everything travel through the pipes.
I mean, by the way, and it was really wonderfully designed. And again, this is technology we shouldn't be using on just, you know, villain super jails. But they really did a great job on that.
Listen, transparent toilets are where it's at. That's like, you know, Wonder Woman has her invisible jet. You know, it's got to have an invisible toilet on there.
If you've ever had a colonic, it's the same idea. Like, you kind of get to see what goes by.
You see everything.
You know, you see everything.
And everyone else gets to see it too, which is the cool part, because all the plumbing is translucent.
Yeah, and that's really for John Cena's team, they get to make sure that nothing that's coming out is like a message.
Like, or like
that
a zip drive.
Digested and is shitting out some sort of message in a capsule.
That's right.
Or anything.
Honestly,
no, this technology
we should be
is very
doing
tiny.
This for, you know,
Guantanamo?
Yes, the most violent.
All bad guys
offenders.
Need to be shitting in transparent
toilets.
We
need to see their shit.
We need to see their shit.
This is a note for the Marvel Universe. The raft needs to be totally translucent. We need to see these supervillains
shitting.
As
you talk about this, Jason, I'm realizing that Magneto also didn't have a toilet in there. He had a bed. So was his toilet invisible, or was his toilet, did they have to walk
Magneto,
him out?
Here's the thing. Magneto's shits are so high in metal content, he can just to use his powers to extract them from his butt cleanly and then send them away. He doesn't need a
send
toilet.
Send them away. Just put
just,
them
just
all
like, boom.
Out into space.
Yes. Yeah.
I want to just talk to what Adam was saying about we jump into this movie and we don't have much to go on, because it seems like Roman and Tej...
We don't have much to go on except for 8 previous movies.
Well, I mean, but again,
over the last 20 years,
a lot has changed
that's a lot for us, some of us, to remember.
Well, yes.
Oh, yes, that's true. I did rewatch all 8 in the last 3 weeks.
Did you really?
I did.
How fun. Wow.
I watched all 8 extended cuts.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God, Jason.
Even so, they always kind of play a little catch-up, then set up a new thing that's going on.
Right.
And this one was just kind of episodic and obligatory, sort of, just in the kickoff.
Well, this was also the first time. This was the first time they've used the language of a flashback to give us context for the team, for Dom, but for anybody. Yeah. Like, this is the first time they've, this is the first time they've ever gone into the past like this, you know?
Well, I mean, I will say this. As much as there are some confusing elements, like the idea that, like, okay, Roman and Tej and Ramsey, I guess they are now working together, even though we last left them and they were kind of like a romantic triangle. But I was like, either way, they're kind of working on it. They're in a team and Dom is not in a team. And I don't know, but I love that this writer, Dan Casey, who is new to the franchise, Chris Morgan had written all of them, but Tokyo Drift, I believe, or number 2, he comes in and he's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to get this movie going. And I actually think just diving in was the way to go, because then there's a lot of meta shit in this movie and it's more
Holy shit.
I mean, there's
so
lot.
Much meta. Basically, Tyrese's character, Roman, is a meta. His entire character is to serve as a meta textual commentator on the movies. He keeps saying, hey, has anybody noticed? Like, we keep getting into these crazy adventures. I was shot 14 times just now and none of us can die. Like, does this seem weird to anybody? Like, they're leaning into the criticisms that the movie gets, that the movie has turned a story about street racers who used to steal TV, DVD combination players into, like, people who, like, are the Avengers, essentially, and are, like, using cars in ways that are superhero level, you know, like, they're god level people. They cannot die or be hurt at all. And Tyrese comments on that throughout the movie, and I thought it was hilarious.
Well, they had to because of where they end up going, where Tyrese and Ludacris up fucking going at the end of the movie, which I could not.
And we called that. We called that years ago.
We did.
Yes.
And I think I did.
Oh, you very well may have.
I don't know if anyone wants to check the tapes.
Check the tapes, but I think we can all confidently say June called it.
But here's the thing about the space sequence. I have to say, I was a little disappointed.
Oh.
What?
Okay.
Okay.
They drive a car in space. This movie is so car-based that even when they go to space, they drive a car.
And they outfit that car to be like a Back to the Future DeLorean. Like, they're like, they hit buttons and the car's like,
yes. And he hits the gas to go forward space.
They have a Nas. They have a Nas tank in space. Like,
a big
what? Here's what
Nas
didn't
tank.
Happen. They didn't have a race in space.
Oh, I see. Yes, that's true.
And that's
the space race. You wanted it to be the space race.
I wanted a space race. Okay, and I wanted a sense of, like, action up there, you know, and out there.
It wasn't enough that they drove through a satellite and then, without knowing how or where, drove to the International Space Station.
And
again, drove a car there.
But again, I am, as the author of the original source material, like, I have, you know, of course I'm going to be disappointed when I see it realized on screen. So it wasn't, for me, it wasn't exactly what I thought it was
going
to be.
Amazing. You wanted, like, a woman in a space bikini floating out in space going like that and like the car starting
Dom, we found a race of aliens that love to race, and that would have been the end. Like, them,
by the way, if Fast 10 is the space race, I'm on board.
I'm on board.
It didn't feel like there was a sense of urgency out there.
What are you talking about? They literally were like, we're 4 seconds away from complete destruction. You have to do it.
I don't know.
And I did want one of them to have to get out of the car and do a spacewalk.
Oh, yes, me too.
It was calling for a spacewalk. Yeah.
There's no way that the car, their suits, or anything can withstand the pressures of space. There's just absolutely no way.
By the way, they popped out of that car at the end when you see them at the space station. Like, they, like, as if they rolled down the window and was like, hey, what, like,
hey,
they're
can
on.
We come on? They are, they're, the movie, this movie, I will say, does for me, I will say, one of the things that this, having now watched them all, one of the things that this franchise does so smartly is it's always course correcting. And this one, they were like, oh no, we know what these movies are. We have to not only recognize it and comment on it through Tyrese's kind of meta commentary, but also lean into how silly these movies are let them be silly.
This is my point. This is what I know. I took a lot of flack online about this because I think a lot of people think that Hobbs and Shaw was too silly and too whatever, but Hobbs and Shaw set a template that I feel like this movie embraced and kind of brought it back, because I felt like Fast 8 was a little too serious, and I don't feel like Justin Lin makes all these sequences fun and big, and they're stupid in the best ways. Like in like, it's like magnets. Great, let's do a fucking.
Oh my god! This movie, this movie was basically underwritten by Big Magnet. Like they're almost every set piece utilized. They basically find, for anybody who hasn't seen the movie and is listening to this, they find a bunch in the early scene. They find a bunch of incredibly powerful magnets, and almost every set piece for the rest of the movie utilizes those magnets somehow.
And it does not get old.
No, it doesn't. And magnets that are basically like gravity level, like
like more than gravity, more than they're like gravity. Like a black, they can pull a car through a building.
And they can also push it off with equal force. So, like, they have a dial in every car. And it's like, I turn it to 8, and it sucks in cars. I turn it to 1, and it shoots the car off into, like, 20 feet the other way. It's like, the magnet has a lot of force. It was awesome. And we first see the magnet in use in the best possible sequence, which is Dom's brother, who we've never really met. And I'm glad that the characters also call that out, too. But he drives off a mountain and then into into a magnet plane. It was amazing.
Oh yeah. Well, not okay. I so that happens. So that happens where John Cena jumps off a mountain, lands in the plane. Then Dom and Letty are trapped. You know, they're getting fired upon by the military of whatever country that they've illegally entered. Who knows where they get all their gear? How they get transported? I don't understand the infrastructure that allows the team to do what they do, but we don't even have to. They're so smart to not even examine it. But that move where Dom, the bridge is out, and Dom drives at the out bridge.
Okay, that.
And manages to hook a cable against the car and swing the car across the chasm and kind of like it swings and lands on the other side of the chasm in another country, in a safe country, on like, and they survive effortlessly.
Wait, is that the same sequence though? Is that the bridge sequence? Because then there's the other
Car that drives straight up the bridge.
Yeah.
That's just not, that's below. The other car. Yes, yes. Same so sequence though.
They hit the bridge. Tyrese hits the bridge as it's falling apart, like Indiana Jones Temple of Doom style, and they're getting across it, but by the time they get to the other edge, the most of the bridge has fallen down, but they were able to defy gravity and we're gonna just drive up the
thing. And Vin Diesel sees this as he's driving towards it, and you see him realize, oh, I know what I'll do. And he does what Jason just described, and it's absolutely insane and makes zero sense.
And he's shifting.
Physics-wise.
He's shifting a little bit in there too, like not his body, but like literally the car shifter. And when that car jumps on the bottom ledge of that other mountain on the other side, it flips, boom, 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 boom. Doesn't explode like the dad's car.
They're not wearing seatbelts.
The car like flip. All the windows are broken. And when you look in the inside, Dom and Letty look like they are ready to go out on the night on the town. There's not a mark on them.
Not a scratch.
Not even
they
like
all
a piece
walk
of
away
grease.
From so much destruction without a scratch. It's shocking. They do one of the things that really this movie leans into heavily, which I'm now obsessed with in these movies, and I'm pretty sure it's just Justin Lin that does this. Is that Justin Lin lets cars be extensions of physicality. So, like, So, like, in this case, this is like Tarzan swinging across a vine, across a chasm on a vine, you know? But in this case, they instead of catching it with their hands and swinging across, they catch it with the car and swing across. Instead of the bridge going out like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and them having to climb up what's left of the bridge, they can drive up what's left of the bridge. There's another one where Letty is, like, thrown from something and she's going to fall to her death. And Dom drives his car around and he catches her with his car.
Wow. So cars are hands.
Her landing on the hood and like grabbing on the inside ridge of the hood and looking at him through the windshield is now like their signature romantic move.
They see each other through cars.
Yeah, and when she did that, and they look at each other, and they're like, all right, yeah, we did that.
June, how many times have I done that to you, caught you on the hood of the car?
Like, if she landed on the hood of his car, she would land with the weight and the ferocity that would cause her to die, and they would be staring at each other while she died on the hood of his car. They constantly are using cars as extensions of their physicality.
It's almost like they are
that's how in control they are.
Like, Transformers are robot and cars, and they can jump across. They can do things. I did have a couple of like logic questions because, and I don't want to get bogged down in it, but this is the one that really stuck out to me. Dom and Letty are living in a farm, very removed from where we don't know where. This so removed that the sight of a car coming causes them to go into full fucking panic terror mode. Like, we're gonna be home invaded. Now, they say to Dom and Letty, hey, we're going to go find Mr. Nobody, which they say Mr. Nobody about a zillion times in like 5 minutes in one sequence.
Truly.
I was like, wow, they must be regretting this name, Mr. Nobody. But so he's like, no, I don't do that anymore. But wheels are going to be up at 6 a.m. At one point, it seems like Dom decides to go around like, let's say 10 p.m. midnight. I'm going to give it in that zone. Who's babysitting Brian, the baby?
Yes.
Because I know that Brian is also watching the other kids, but it didn't seem like he had a chance to, like there would have been one thing if he would have brought Brian to the airplane and said, all right, but first we got to make a stop in L.A. Like, that baby, who's...
They never
mentioned it. Oh, yeah. No, where... They don't mention it until much later when Mia shows up and she's like, don't worry, all the kids are with Brian. So at
that's the interesting thing about the movie, though. Like, the movie, and they did this in the last one, like, they equate fatherhood and parenthood with death. And the concept of family in the movie really only applies to work and adult friendships. Like, it is never applied to actual, like, parental, biological ties, which is really upsetting. And he never... I also found it fascinating because that is Dom's child, right?
Yes,
that's
his
child. Yeah,
it's his child with
Elsa Pataky, and I think her name is
woman who died in the last movie.
He also just never checks in.
No,
never.
Oh no. And Letty
mentions him again until the end of the movie.
And Letty doesn't seem interested in being a surrogate mother to young Brian at all. She seems
not at all.
She's like, I don't want this.
She's
life.
She's ready
basically.
To go immediately. Like,
and
which
I love that
I actually liked, but I liked, was also I thought that was interesting. You know, that they didn't, that they gave that to her, that she wasn't. But it just seemed like, I was like, is he still in the trunk? Is little Brian in a trunk somewhere? Like,
is he still hiding in the hidey hole?
I'll be back in a couple of days.
Is Paul Walker's character still alive?
Yes.
Oh yes, Adam.
He's just retired.
Well,
from
that's who pulled up at the end. Yeah. In the blue
car. He's in a living death, which is called fatherhood.
Yes.
I was going to save that question for the end. It led me to believe that the next movie is going to have Paul Walker in it again, way the movie ended.
I think the idea is that at the final scene in the last movie, they all get together for a family dinner and they don't mention Paul.
Barbecue.
And I feel like there's a couple mistakes that the fans called out. We'll get the justice for Han in a second. And I think it was like, what do you mean? You didn't want to have Paul at the barbecue? And they were like, this is how we can do it. We can say he's coming to the barbecue. We can give him something to do. But I think the last movie, they kind of like wrote him out. Like, they didn't really like incorporate him the right way. So I feel like they wanted to make him more present. But they do say, hey, we got out of this. We retired, which is a hard thing to say. We retired because we have a family, but you got two more movies coming up. you got to get out of retirement a little bit. Like you got to.
Well,
like,
it's also like now, you know, and it's so interesting that the only thing that can make Vin turn his back on his son and his parental duties is the knowledge that his brother is. Oh, I guess he doesn't know that his brother's out there yet.
He doesn't. He only yet, knows. Which is weird.
He only knows that postcard, the Han postcard. So he thinks the Han.
By the way, he doesn't seem like much for sentimentality.
But had he figured out it was Han yet?
No.
No, he just got a postcard from Han that he put in a drawer, and then obviously when the house blew up in L.A., that somehow survived.
Didn't he say he got the postcard from Han after Han died?
Yes. Yeah,
for sure.
So
he eventually figures out that is from Han, but when he leaves his son at the beginning of the movie, I just was unclear as an audience member what it was that was pulling him so hard to go meet up with them and get on the plane.
I agree. Not
I'll tell clear. You what. It was that he wanted to leave. There's yeah. That's it. That's it.
No, yeah.
That I think is you're right. It. He wanted to get the fuck out of there.
I think it's that the movie needed to happen. And so he needed to go.
Well, look, Mr. Nobody is family, right? He was like, I can't not help my family. Mr. Nobody helped me. He cleaned my record. Like he's got it. Like he felt an obligation. Okay. Like, yes, I love being a father, but at the same time, I am a father and that's my family. But also Mr. Nobody is also my family because he came to my last picnic. I believe that that was part of the reasoning.
Here's another one of my, and I did enjoy the movie a lot, but here's another one of the things that was sort of missing for me is I feel like in kind of getting the John Cena character and building up the kind of conflict between he and Dom and knowing that he's eventually going to turn good and become an ally at the end, they never really pushed him and made him really bad, right? Like they should have, I think, gone all the way like they did with Statham and made him an evil, you know, he kills Han or whatever, at least we think he did. Like he was a bad guy and then they turned him. And I think in the absence of that and Charlize clearly only having, they only got her for 3 days or whatever.
3 days.
It was.
Feels like one day. It seems like, well, did you sell stuff before lunch and after the sell stuff after lunch?
I thought about it because I thought it's probably too much stuff for one day, maybe two. I thought if they had 5 days, you would have actually had her outside at some point.
Yeah.
But she never leaves the stage. So I landed on 3 days, but maybe it is one or two. But I think with her sidelined and John Cena is like the main bad guy, but not really. I feel like the movie is missing a really bad guy. And they always had such great bad guys.
I buy that. And you know what? It is interesting. It's very hard to put a villain next to a villain that you love. It's like, you know, and that's tough too, because all you want to do is like get her out of that box and be like, please take over. And she does eventually. But again, it's limited.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
I wrote a bunch in my thing, like John Cena, seems to think he's playing like the Terminator or something. Like he's like very stoic and still and wooden and kind of just like matter of fact. There's no flourish or flair to him. There's no joy to it. Okay. I don't know if you guys felt the same or not, but he felt to me very just didn't rise to the level that other people were at. But I'm wondering if that is him kind of not being able to get there, or is he doing what he thinks is a Toretto?
Yeah.
Is he like, I'm related, I'm Vin Diesel's brother, so I can't act this whole other way. I have to exist under his shadow. So I would act like he acts, but slightly adjacent, you know? Is he basically doing a Vin Diesel impression?
I'm going to have to agree with you here, because we know that John Cena is capable.
Side?
No, John Cena is capable of really being the life of the party. I mean, you see him even in the Suicide Squad clips. He's funny. He was Blockers. He was great in that. Like he,
I like John Cena. To be clear, I like John Cena.
I know, you know? I think you're right. I think this might be a choice because he is devoid of being very evil, very sarcastic. Like, there's nothing more, like, he's playing more like Jason Bourne in like Jason Bourne program, Jason Bourne, not Jason Bourne. I'm trying to figure out my identity. Uh-huh.
Like just Treadway, like, Jason
right.
Bourne.
Yeah, he just feels very. Yeah, right. Terminator is like probably a good.
He felt to me like a Terminator. Like he was just joylessly moving through his plan without any kind of, without any relish, without
his plan
any emotional.
Is only to get money.
Yeah.
He doesn't even want to destroy the world.
I read it differently.
Okay,
because I read it because what we end up finding out. I thought that in the beginning, Jason, but then what we end up finding out is he's actually held the secret.
Yes,
you know, for his whole life, and it sort of. It turned. I feel like he turned on himself at a very young age, and so to me, it kind of justified why he was so disconnected. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I actually really liked John Cena in this movie.
I did too. I thought he was good, and I think he, for like the kind of actor he is, and the kind of role this was, I thought he was really good at like projecting smarts.
Yes.
And in other roles he's played, I see that, and I think it's interesting and way more interesting than some of these actors sometimes are. But I think, Jason, you're right too. Like he was written and maybe directed, I don't know, a little bit into a box in that the character is a little bit of a tweener. Like he's not super evil. He's not a good guy, clearly. And so he's sort of riding this line. I think as an actor, he did a good job with that, but it's a tough kind of line to. And I, there was a vacuum. I did miss The Rock and Jason Statham for that sense of fun. Those guys
are fun. That's the thing,
fun.
Is like Statham and The Rock, which I think John Cena is supposed to kind of replace those guys and that energy. And I think it's good for him to be a big, physically imposing villain. I liked that. Because we don't have Statham, we don't have The Rock, we don't have any of those kind of physical threats. So I liked, and I liked John Cena's character, and I liked his kind of, I liked what he was. I liked basically that they used John Cena's character to answer questions from the past, i.e., how do you think Mr. Nobody knew who you were? You know, when John Cena's like, I'm the one that told him about your team. I'm the one that, like, it is, it kind of answers some of the questions that make the Fast and Furious timeline a little bit wonky, which is he kind of is retconning it by saying, I've been following you all along. I know what's up.
It's much like that reveal in the latest James Bond, not the one that's coming out, but the one before it, where it's like, who do you think was behind the whole thing? It was me. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, it was? Oh, okay. Like,
well, listen, John Cena did an excellent job at, pretending to be the same height as Vin Diesel.
Yeah, it's not easy.
I mean, that is not easy. And I believed it.
I believed that he was a smaller man. I will say that there is something really interesting about the stoic nature of them, and I think they did pair up really well, and they're fighting buddies. And you have to have a turn for the character because you know he's going to become good at the end. So it's a tricky position to play, but he also doesn't
Can I ask a question, Paul, that I think you and I discussed in the theater quietly? There's only one other patron. Yeah. But what is their art? Are they Italian?
Oh,
well, this is a
this
good,
is Charlize. Charlize? Is it Charlize who has this line where they
say,
my
favorite line of the whole movie?
I know
yes.
the Toretto's have a famously mixed bloodline.
Famously.
Yeah.
Famously mixed.
Because those are not. They are not brothers.
No, well, and nor is Mia their sister.
No, nor
like
is
Aryan.
Young. Nor is
he's
young
as
Vin.
Aryan as it comes.
I mean, nor young Vin, old Vin, different. Mia, it's all over the map.
But
the dad's
like Nordic. Like,
she says Nordic. She says, I didn't know there was a Nordic.
She says
line.
That. She references his Nordic chin.
Okay, yes.
So she says, I didn't. And then she's, what did she say? She says, you have a Nordic chin. I wouldn't have predicted that. You know,
yeah,
which is basically like Papa Toretto got around, I guess. I don't know exactly what the implications are of that, but
she was trying to insult his mother, I guess, or his.
Yeah. I mean, so they could also have different moms. We don't know.
Like, I guess I assumed
doubtful,
it was dad
though.
Because they seem to be being raised
together.
By their dad.
Right.
So you're
okay.
suggesting, Paul, they had different moms and one mom just like dropped one off to be raised by the other mom?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't see that every day, but I guess it is a possibility.
She wasn't attached.
But they really attached to this. But that's what I mean.
That's the interesting thing about the movie. It really deals with like maternal ambiguity, and I appreciate that.
But right. By the way, it also opens it up for the two moms to come in the next movie and be the bad guys, team up with Helen Mirren. By the way, man, that Helen Mirren scene.
Helen Mirren driving with Dom in the car, one of my favorite scenes.
One of the best scenes. I know people have talked about this. I wanted them to kiss.
I wanted them to fuck so bad.
So bad.
There's some really like major sexual chemistry between
she
the two.
She is so good. And she's doing, here's what I'll say. She's so hot. She's doing such a great job. She's so compelling. But she's also selling that she's a killer driver.
Oh, yes.
Which is hard. Yes. It's hard to sell like stunt driving that her character is meant to be doing while then effortlessly having a conversation with Dom as well.
Okay, what's so interesting about that sequence is I guess she stole some jewels.
I don't know.
I can't remember. Okay, yep. So she could have easily just walked away.
Sure. Yeah.
Walked away.
Yeah.
Just walk out of there. Lots of people are coming and going. Walk to your next location. She has to steal a car.
She has to steal a car and get in a car chase.
She took off like a bat out of hell. It's like you have flagged for everybody around you. Like you're the person. Get that person who's driving the car really fast.
And here's a couple things that were interesting about this scene. First of all, I just want to talk about pure joy. And we talked about like Dom being a stoic character. When he sees her, he lights up in a way that I have never. Like he lights up like when I see Vin Diesel doing singing videos on YouTube and stuff like that. Like it's like he is in pure joy mode. And that sequence, I was a little confused. It's like, all right, so he's asking her questions and then she just drives him to the party. I thought so she had no intention of going to that party.
Jacob
just dropped him off.
Yeah.
Jacob was paying
like
her.
An Uber.
Oh, okay.
Jacob was paying Jacob gave her two missions asked her to provide two things, one of which was to drop Dom off at this party. And the other was, you know, Dom's asking her, how did Jacob get a hold of this, that, and the other? And she's like, I might have told him what that information.
Right.
He wanted two things, that information and for me to drop you here.
But how did he know that Vin was going to be in London?
How did he know? How did he know that Vin would come to London and that Vin would seek out Helen Mirren? Of course. But it doesn't matter that there's a party that she drops him at basically a rave that is happening on an English manor.
That he ends up having a bunch of his own people at, right?
Yeah.
All the girls.
Well, those girls are hired by John Cena and the guy from The Witcher. Those are like their people. But then Vin Diesel
don't they end up
has like
helping
has
Vin.
Well, those are the women that he has hired. They are part. So this is another question. The Interpol, like I guess yes. Dom is like circumnavigated the phone call to Interpol and got like, oh, I'll use my Interpol team. Like Dom has his own Interpol team that could come
at
the party.
Mm.
Right.
That he didn't know he was going to.
Right.
When he's loaded into that van. Yeah. The thing about the movies is that Dom is somehow always like six moves ahead of the bad guy.
And
that
absolutely.
In a way that is completely unknowable. In a way that is just, it's impossible to have planned these steps, knowing that what the move the other would make would be.
And we also have, I mean, I think we have followed Dom's journey pretty clearly. Like, oh my gosh, you got involved with nobody. Like, there hasn't been like time passed
when the Interpol team was revealed to be Cardi B.
Mm-hmm.
I was what is happening?
Well, like that to me is a callback to something that didn't happen in any of the movies. Like, and that's what you wanted it to be, but it was sort of like, thank you so much for helping me out because now I got this. It's like, wait, we don't even know who you are. When did he like help out a team of like female,
part of me is like, are they seeding this as some sort of like thing? Like, are we going to like see more of this? elite female kind of like military team, or I don't know what. I don't know what they are. I was fascinated by that just as a reality. And I was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to be part of this going forward. And then they weren't. But I was like, oh, I wonder if this team will be now used by Dom and his crew as they'll be, because they're always bringing more people in, you know, which I love. You know, I love that Vin Diesel understands that the success of the movies is predicated on the modern iteration from 5 forward is to bring in other actors, other people from all these other places and give them bringing Han back, and not just bringing Han back, but giving Han a teammate that is his character, that his character's now been raising this young girl that he found, and people are after her because she's the key to unlock the mega weapon or whatever, and that they're now just part of reintroduced and just completely part of the team. I loved it.
Sort of, but then also another thing I thought was missing was when The Rock and Jason Statham were in it, it seemed like there was a bit more of a sense of humor around Dom as well, and sort of making fun of him a little bit was part of the fun as well. And I think that has gone away. Yeah, I know.
Well, they James Bonded him, because what they do is they split the team up so effectively that you take the two funny guys and you put them with more funny guys, and then you take Vin and you separate him from everybody. Then you take Jordana Brewster and Letty and you put them on their own. Like, you almost, they, it's almost like the alchemy of the separation was wrong. It's like, they take Roman and Vin, you need to kind of mix it up a little bit, but you just, like, Vin is doing straight up James Bond.
They've really kind of segmented it into their thing, you know, which is, it's Roman, Natalie Emmanuel, and Tyrese, you know, because, you know, at one point they have the set piece where the nerds, then Dom is always lone wolf, and now I think they're creating what seems to me to be like kind of when they send Letty and Mia and they to Japan, it becomes like, oh, now there's going to be like the girls of Fast 9 team, the women in the Fast 9 universe. They are now, they are teamed up together, in a way. And I will say, when they go and the sniper takes out the hit team that's coming after them, and you know, it's Han as the sniper, I started to weep. When Han was revealed, I cried. I was so, it was such a, even though I've seen the trailer,
you know,
that
he's back,
in,
he's in the posters.
I know he's coming back.
Part of
I
the
know,
advertising.
I'm familiar with the Justice for Han, but like, he was, his return was emotionally very satisfying.
I cried when Vin hugged him, because I felt like you didn't see Vin. When Vin said, okay, it's okay to feel, like when he told us it's okay.
Well, you see everything through Vin's eyes.
Yeah.
For you, Vin is your surrogate.
Which is why that whole sequence we'll get to the underwater sequence, but I mean that sequence.
But not just Fast and Furious movies either. You just have life. Like a whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why he doesn't recognize Vin. It's all about Dom.
Vin is my eyes. I am Vin. And when I see Han like that, I will say that this movie, we needed to bring back Han. I'm excited that Han is back. I thought, and this is why, again, I go, Dan Casey, you're a fucking genius, because he has a pretty crazy deck to deal with. He's like, I gotta figure out all this shit. And the way he figures it out and the way that they justify that Han is alive is pretty like loose,
but this is, again, this gets at what I think these movies do so well, which is don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. And also, like, I feel like, maybe I made this up, but I feel like they said a number of times, like, it's too complicated to explain.
Yes.
Like, there's no time for it. And I was like, oh, okay, there's no time for it. Like,
doesn't Han say, like, Mr. Nobody worked his magic or something like that? He's got a line that just glosses over. And then you see a flashback where Han and Mr. Nobody are watching the car explosion you think killed Han.
I think he said something like, well, Mr. Nobody can really make stuff look real, or something like that. Where
I mean, Mr. Nobody is he is the centerpiece now. It has gone from a character that we met. By the way, Scott Eastwood did not make a return appearance in this movie. Interesting. But Mr. Nobody has become the center of this universe, and he came in only like two movies ago, but thank God, because he has figured it all out. And there's a moment where I'm like, maybe he's using projection, but that's like, oh, if he's like, all I wanted was like Mr. Nobody. This is my version of it. Do the same exact sequence, but then have Mr. Nobody go like, it's working. And then you turn and you see Han on the ground in front of a green screen. And you go like, oh, there's some sort of projection thing going on. Like Han's pretending he's in the car and the car is actually a robot car. Like, but they don't even do it.
They don't even do that. They don't even need to do that. They're just doing, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Keep moving.
Remember that show, the BBC show Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch? Like, he fakes his death and you're like, oh, how did he do it? And even that one, I was like, I like this. Like, and Tyrese does it earlier in the movie. Like, a car drops on him. And it's like, I'm okay. And you're like, ah, fuck it. And I think that Tyrese car drop is to get you ready for the Han one later. It's like, anything is possible.
I think so.
Giselle is back. You know Giselle's back. And I think
that's what they're also kind of saying, which is Tyrese is essentially having a crisis of mortality.
Is he in a movie?
Tyrese inside the movie is like, are we immortal? Like, are we invincible?
I think they're going to do like that John Scalzi book, Red Shirts. In the next movie, they're going to make, we are in a movie called Fast and Furious, and we are action stars. We need to break out into the real world. It's like Last Action Hero. They have to break out into the real world.
I, for a second, when he first started doing that, thought, are they going to reveal some sort of supernatural element to at least Tyrese and Ludacris, and that they are somehow bulletproof, and there's some supernatural element. But yeah, you're right that that Mr. Nobody is now like a deus ex machina.
Yeah.
Like, anything that makes no sense, they now have that character to just go and paper over anything weird.
For example, they're like, oh no, what do we do? And Natalie Emmanuel is like, oh, there were some coordinates buried in Mr. Nobody's message. They go to those coordinates and it's a secret headquarters. So now they have a secret headquarters that they can completely operate out of. So now they have, and I was like, okay, so now they've fully moved location to this secret headquarters that Mr. Nobody sent them, blah, blah, blah. Again, where is baby Brian? They're all just, how long does this mission must take weeks and weeks. I think it also took place
in 72 hours.
How? There's so much international travel.
There's so much nighttime. They're always at night.
They're sleeping and traveling during the day.
They reference pop culture a lot.
Oh, the Star Wars
the
monologue.
Bad guy is like, get me everything. Yeah. Get me Chewbacca if you can.
Yeah. I was
like, what is this?
And then another Star Wars reference like 3 minutes later.
Yes, Charlize says you're like Yoda, like the puppet with someone's hand up its ass.
That's great. That was a great twist.
That was great.
By the way, I mean, look, Han is Han Solo. I mean, his name is Han Solo.
It is?
Yeah, truly.
His last name is Han Solo?
Yeah, it's spelled differently. Yeah, that's the whole thing. So, I'll tell you how it's spelled. But that's like the big joke. Like, that was a joke that Justin Lin put in.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The original movie. Because basically, Han
is from A Better Tomorrow.
Better Tomorrow.
He's great. I love that guy.
When he comes in, like, eating a bag of chips or whatever he's doing, because we've seen him, remember, that's what he used to do because he wanted to quit smoking. He was always snacking in the old movies. And he comes in and he's just like, hey, what's up? He's so chill. He's maybe the best actor in the series, like, in terms of seeming like compelling to watch and like weathered and like looks like he's been through shit, you know?
Okay. So his name is Han Soul-OH. Han Solo.
Got it.
And that's his alias that he is. So I mean, last names aren't used that much here, but that, you know, that's his deal.
Wow. We get to see the Tokyo Drift guys, you know, everybody gets to be in the movie. Everybody gets to have like a check-in moment and a hero moment. Like, they're building the rocket car that then those guys can use to go to space. Oh, isn't
that
lucky?
You know what? I did not see that coming, and I was delighted that that's how they came back into the movie.
Yeah.
That they're going to provide the way to space.
That they're now just like, weird, like, Mythbusters style.
Yeah, it's so great.
Experimental team like that. Like, again, that nothing prepares you for the fact that this is what they do now. Right? Like, yeah, the same way that Ludacris at the end of Five has had all of his dreams come true. So he opens up a machine, a mechanic shop. Right. But now he's like one of the world's greatest hackers and we don't question it. You know, it's just like,
Right.
He's like one of the world's greatest hackers. He was never a tech guy.
Well, I mean,
we
talked about this in the mini episode. I know people make a big thing. Although the cars do everything, but really everything does everything in this movie. I mean,
yeah.
Vin Diesel and John Cena, their bodies are so rock hard that they break through walls on simple punches. And not even just them, even one of the bad guys, the guy with the tattoo, when they're fighting on the top of that truck, like a billboard crashes through, like Wile E. Coyote style. And it's like, I'm all in. I mean, by the way, the action is great. I'm having fun. Something I wrote down, I don't know if I understand everything, but it's fun.
That sequence in Edinburgh where they're jumping from car to car. Am I right about that? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was beautifully directed. I mean, that is a great sequence. And there are, what, five of those terrific action sequences that are legitimately inventive. And each movie, they figure out how to do something new. And it's really
By the way, I did think the problem with the ziplining was you just have John Cena going like, okay, I guess my escape plan is I'm going to zipline across Edinburgh. Like, yeah. There was no like, I'm just to one spot. It just seemed like I'll go to here. And I go to here, and I go to here, mm-hmm. and I go to here. Like, wouldn't everyone in Edinburgh be like, what the fuck is this guy supplying?
And
like,
wouldn't you run out of Edinburgh? Is not a huge city. You would eventually run out of tall buildings.
Yeah, but it was such a funny, again, they're always using new tools to up the ante. And it's preposterous that a giant wrestler is going to zipline across a whole city, you know, over and over and over again, you know, shooting the gun, ziplining across, shooting the guns. It's so funny to me. And that meanwhile, like this whole other thing is happening, which is Ludacris and Tyrese are in a fight in the back of the van, in the back of the magnet van.
That was so fun.
With those guys. And then Natalie Emmanuel gets in the driver's seat. She can't drive. That was great. Her whole character is that she can't drive, which she's said in previous movies, but this is the first time they've ever then made her drive, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes.
And such a good way to add different stakes to that car chase, which is she's driving poorly. She's doing comedic beats of like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, you know, but it's also causing havoc in the back of the van where Roman and Tyrese are. I thought it was great.
It's great.
Like,
that's
a funny scene.
Yeah.
I also had a thought about this, and I don't know, June, like, there's something about that fight in the back of the van, and I don't know why I started thinking about this. Like, how hard and how much would you have to punch a human being before they pass out? Because that seems to be the default thing. I'm going to punch you until you're knocked out. And that seems hard, like, for people who are not, like, a professional boxer. Like, I'm not going to put that on Toretto and Cena. I believe that they could probably do that, even though they're both Torettos. But, like, I felt like that fight in the back of the van was kind of fun because they had to punch those guys a lot. Like, those guys are getting punched, before they finally, like, just crapped out. But to be punched so many times that you pass out is a pretty brutal way to go. I don't know why. Like,
yeah,
just really
the amount of punching that happens on average in movies, if there was a bar fight like in real life, that amount of punching would for sure kill someone.
Right.
Especially in a moving van with edges out, steel van. It was pretty rough. I want to spend a little bit of time just talking about this moment from French cinema here where Dom rips the roof off of a building with his bare hands, pulls down with two chains a roof, and then and then falls into the water, and then has this moment that is, I think, one of the most beautiful artistically directed moments in all of Fast and Furious, where he is walking through his own life and dealing with mortality and family. It also allows him to look at scenes from the movie from a different perspective, as if like you're like wearing an Oculus and you can kind of be like, oh right, that's okay, that's what I missed. But like that sequence was pretty shocking to me, like that was in this movie.
Well, it's the first time, you know, it's really kind of like a near-death experience for Dom, obviously. You know, it's set up that he is essentially sacrificing himself so that the others can live. He tells Letty to tell his son that he loves him or he never gave up, whatever. He tells Letty, like, final words for his son. And then he pulls this roof down, he falls into the water, and it's like him dying, sinking to the bottom and dying. But what's interesting is that it does this the first time in any of these movies, Dom realizes he was wrong.
Right.
Because when he has these visions, that's he true. Realizes he was wrong.
Yeah.
He
got it wrong.
He got it wrong. And it's the first time in any Fast and Furious movie where Dom is wrong. And not only is he wrong, but he betrayed family.
Right.
He betrayed his brother. He took away from his brother the only thing that for Toretto's matter, which is family. Mm-hmm. Because his
which,
brother
by the way,
out
can
of,
I just say one thing, Jason? Because yes to all of this, but it's so funny to me that they keep on saying in these movies, like, the worst thing you could do to a Toretto is take away their family. Yeah. It's like, that's the worst thing you could do to anyone.
Yeah.
That's by the way, all just, these fans, and all
Toretto's
the dads
aren't unique in this regard.
They're not. Everyone like, we'd, I think we'd fond. All be upset if our family.
Well, there is a line. There is a line, June. I wanted to break that down. This line that Mia says. She's like, Mia says to Letty, "Dom is my brother, but you'll always be my sister."
Like, yeah,
what does that
what
mean
does like that mean?
It's meaningless, essentially.
Yeah, it truly is. But Jason, to go back to what you're saying, the movie was different in that sense, to see Dom in a vulnerable state of not knowing and having misread a situation. It actually made me think about the younger Dom and how, like, his father did not think he was strong enough to handle that information.
Mm.
His father did not assumed that he was too weak, really, to handle it.
Well, the way they frame it in the movie is slightly different, which is his father believed in Dom so much to be the good one that he wanted to keep Dom pure. Like that Dom was going to be like the, he was the, Dom was the chosen one. And that Jacob was the, not the runt, but the little brother who knew, like, who the dad kind of was like, "You have to help me throw this fight. We can't tell Dom because he's too good."
Oh,
because
see, Dom's whole character I read it is as like Dom's too, Dom is too attached to his father and to the lore of his father.
I think that's in there too.
Yeah, he can't handle this reality.
That's
and it
right.
made him seem to me so well, I think it broadened his character as actually like, oh, wow, this is a different Toretto where we're now seeing that his whole sense of his own masculinity is based on a lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah. Jacob keeping this secret all of these years, you would think like this whole conflict and this whole sort of splinter in their family could be solved with one conversation. But John Cena is also protecting Dom, not only keeping the word he gave to his dad, but he also is protecting him from thinking of his father in this other way. So
yeah,
it is a well-written, conflict that they put together there.
It's got juice. You know, there's something to, you know, without it being, you know, because I was a little bit nervous when they announced that, like, oh, John Cena is going to be his brother, his long lost brother. And I was like, oh, I don't know. That seems a little bit like that could be dicey. But I really liked it because it really serviced something that has really not been attended to in these movies, which is that in all of these movies, Dom is absolutely, unquestionably, always on the right side of every decision. He is always the moral compass of every choice, and he's never questioned. And in this instance, he really is found to be wrong.
Yeah,
his understanding of the situation was wrong, and his inability to question it into adulthood also wrong. And he really has to like have a really come low moment. But what's interesting, and what's so interesting, and what we talked about on the podcast before about how Dominic Dominic Toretto can never lose a fight. You know, how Vin Diesel won't let him lose a fight, won't let him, everything, he has to win everything. He never apologizes. He never says, I'm sorry.
Right, you're right.
Which is crazy.
You're right.
Like, the moment where he acknowledges it to Jacob is to say something like, I don't think I wrote it down, but he says something like, maybe I had it wrong, or maybe you knew too much. I can't, he phrases something in a way that is like, I think I understand what happened now, but he doesn't ever say, I'm sorry that I basically humiliated you in a car race and banished you from family.
Yeah.
You know, like, I took away the thing that we all valued, which was family. I loved the sequence where it's the Edinburgh one, right? Where it's the long convoy, right? And Dom, it's the one where you're talking about, Adam, earlier, where they're jumping across car and bus roofs.
Yes.
They're again, something you cannot do. You can't jump from a car that's moving 30 miles an hour to a car that's going the other direction at 20 miles an hour, land on your feet, and just continue, like Frogger style.
Continue to
jump and fight. Yeah, right? Again, the laws of physics don't apply to these characters, which Tyrese appropriately calls out and should be saying, do the laws of physics not apply to us? Yeah. Are we human? What's happening? Anyway, so Dom gets into the John Cena's character and his German Willem Dafoe Jr. Character are in a transport that is like, I don't know, two semi-trucks in length. It's like a mini railroad thing. And you've seen it in the trailer. It goes upside. It goes vertical at one point. Anyway, they use the magnets. They go vertical. Dom somehow ends up inside this truck as it's tumbling over and over and over again. He is, again, the thing is tumbling over and over and over again. He is able to walk through it.
Yep.
Walking on wall, ceiling, floor. He's walking through it so much so that it falls down like a mountain or something, then lands, and just as he's getting into the driver's seat, and he drives it away.
That's right. That happens.
It is insanity. It's so, he would be double dead.
But hold on and just say, and then manages to escape that same truck that's been hit by two missiles by jumping out of it as it careens off a cliff, but also not being any bit affected by the amount of heat, because that thing is a giant fireball on wheels at that point. I mean,
and he lands like in a superhero pose.
Yes.
He lands like in
Black
a
Widow style, yeah, like Black fist Widow. To floor.
Superhero pose.
And how does the drone that it's revealed that Charlize is flying so she doesn't have to leave the studio where they're shooting, how did they end up downing that? Was that through car trickery as well? I forget.
Yes, he uses the tail and the rear end of the long convoy there thing that he's driving he positions it so that the missiles hit and it forces the truck's tail to spin around and smack the drone that's firing missiles.
That's right.
And it all blows up, and he is completely, without a scratch, unharmed.
I mean, a lot of stuff going on.
He fights like 60 guys at once. Vin Diesel, at one point, fights like 60 guys at once.
In the tell him I love him scene, right? With the chains? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a moment, though, in this movie, this is how much action it has, that it goes completely silent. There's a giant sequence where Vin is running up the side of that truck to get into it. And it's just silent. It's sort of like, almost like background montage. It's like, oh yeah, this is not even this giant set piece, which most people would like pull out. It's like, this is nothing. You don't even need to see the truck flipping and him jumping in. It was like, this is just like, meanwhile, it's a weird thing. I've never seen a movie take such a giant action set piece and treat it like, yeah. And that's going on too.
Was there like narration over some voiceover?
No voiceover. It was just dead silent with music. And that's when the space thing is going on. There's a million things going on.
That's right.
And the only thing I thought about in that sequence a lot, again, this is me in the punching, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Dom's jeans. I've heard dad jeans. I've heard mom's jeans. And I was thinking about Dom's jeans, because Dom's jeans, they're not pure denim. Right, because they're not that kind of color, but they're also not like faded. They're not like whitewashed. They're kind of this weird retro jean. I was looking at it. I was like, where does jump?
They also taper at the bottom weirdly. Like boots. They're also like, yeah. I don't know if they're tucked into his boots, but they don't come over his boots. They end at the top of his boots.
Yeah, so for sure,
that's an interesting.
So he's going to
a
tailor with his jeans. I mean, he's 8 feet tall, so he's got to go to a tailor, obviously. Because the jeans.
Well, he's got to go to the tailor anyway, so that they can remove all his sleeves.
Yeah,
and those are like elastine jeans. Like those jeans, you have to be able to run through a 2-block-long truck in as it's careening off a cliff. You can't do that in like tight denim, so they have to be like spandexy.
What's interesting is like. They'll give in scenes that are appropriate, like in the one we mentioned earlier, like Tyrese and some of the other players will have bulletproof vests on. They'll have body armor or something akin to that on, right? Dom, never. Dom is just like, I'm out here, I'm in the world, I'm bulletproof, essentially, is what he's saying. I don't need Kevlar, I don't need body armor. I'm body armor.
Sure.
I mean, I also notice that when he's doing good things, he's in a white shirt, and when he's doing bad things, he's in a black shirt.
Is that right?
Oh, is that true?
Well, when he pulls the roof down, he's in a black shirt, and when he's doing like I'm on the farm, it's a white shirt. So, and like even when he wouldn't steal the car, he's wearing a jacket over there because it's probably a little cold in London.
With Helen Mirren, I'm not a thief anymore.
I'm not a thief anymore. But it's also like, come on, man, live at this point. What are you doing?
I love that. That she like wanted him to get in on that on her.
He does pull the brake. He does pull the. Yeah, you know,
he does. That. He does. He helps her out.
The number because they insist on using cars and because they use cars on active city streets frequently. I'm going to estimate the number of civilian deaths that happen in the course of the events of this movie is in the thousands.
Oh, and people, this is the first time I will say this too. Justin Lin directed some extras to do some good stuff. Like, but there's that one guy who's shopping for like microwave ovens.
Yeah.
And the car flies through or all the microwave ovens flies out. And like, well, even if you're not getting hit by a microwave oven at 60 miles an hour, you're going to get glass in your face. Someone's getting glass. The dog is going to get glass in their paw.
There's a car. They suck John Cena's car through an entire Scottish building into their truck. It goes through two walls. Like people are in there.
Like shopping or their apartments.
They are so glibly.
I do think it felt like this movie had the highest death toll.
For sure.
For sure.
Maybe the Puerto Rico one where they were dragging the vault. Is that what happened in Puerto Rico?
That's Brazil.
Brazil,
yeah.
That's Brazil. That one had a pretty high body count, too.
Okay.
But,
I actually don't remember.
I think those magnets, because those magnets are pulling, people's, you know, like people in their cars, people in there. They're pulling, like they're using those magnets willy-nilly. And by the way, the magnet shit, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's such a basic idea, and I thought it was super fun.
By the way,
fun.
It's Justin Lin's kid came up with that.
So fun.
Yeah.
But
right?
Maybe
I liked it.
His kid saw Breaking Bad and maybe got it from that. Because it reminded me of Breaking Bad.
You're right,
I forgot
about that, yeah.
Which is fine. I mean,
the movie
great.
Is 80% magnets. 80% magnets. They need the magnets in space.
I don't even understand truly what the magnets are doing, but yeah, I get it. I mean, I guess it's just going to... Everything that has a one and a zero attached to it is going to... I mean, they use it a lot for comedy because, like, you know, when Roman's eating, they turn up the magnets that steal his fork and knife.
Yep. And then, like, a laptop hits it, too, and that laptop is now ruined, but they still thought it was hilarious.
It seems like everything in that room would be ruined, but that amount of magnetism coursing through a small room like that. It also seems like their bodies would be ruined by that. Like, I don't think your body should be that close to magnetism like that. I don't know. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to me.
There's got
to
be radiation involved, too, somehow.
Here's my question, and this is my question for the group. And we've gotten a little bit away from it, but we were talking about it earlier, so I want to reintroduce it. When Dom and so we see young Dom get out of jail, and he shows up at a street race where young Jacob is, and Jacob is like the king of street racing now since Dom's been in prison. And Dom says, "If I beat you, you have to keep driving and never come back. You have to go away." And he sends Jacob basically into exile. Mia is basically like, you know, I kept in touch with him a little bit. Like, is Dom forcing Mia to choose sides?
It seems like, so. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Wait, I don't remember.
I feel
this.
Like.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So what do you, June, I'm curious because I feel like they've never mentioned it before or anything like that. But in my mind, Dom is like forcing Mia to shut out Jacob.
So,
and that is heartbreaking.
It is. And it felt like that last moment where she goes over and hugs Jacob. It felt like she was being released from like a transparent cube, you know, that she had been kept away from him, and that like Scientology style, Dom had told her it's him or me.
Yeah.
Wait, so June,
it was very upsetting.
I think what we're kind of coming to here in a very like organic way is like Vin is emotionally abusive character. He doesn't apologize. He keeps family apart, but yet he projects this image of being perfect, but yet he is not.
Well, he demands that everybody follow his morality. You know,
well, and Jason, did you just say this though? Because it felt like Mia doesn't, she wasn't carrying the baggage of like this idea that Jacob killed her father.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if she even believed it.
Maybe different dads, different moms, different dads.
Or Dom maybe never told her that Jacob was complicit in the murder, or complicit in the death. He might have let her live a life where she didn't know that and just assumed Jacob had disappeared. I don't know. That I don't know. They, you know, he might never have said that.
Right.
He might.
But meanwhile, Jacob was probably hanging out with Mia during the time that Dom was in jail. So, like,
because they're both at the car.
And
race.
Don't you think that if they've kept in touch from time to time, like, Jacob would be like, yeah, Dom did tell me get the fuck out of here.
I don't know, but what I do, because here's the thing that I keep coming back to in these movies, and having just watched them all, it's true. Like, the Dom-Mia brother-sister relationship never makes sense.
Never.
Right? Like, they do not seem like they are brother and sister. They seem like they're part of the same group, and they seem like they've been together since they were young. I understand all of that. They do not seem like brother and sister.
I had forgotten that they were brother and sister until this
movie. Yeah, and so the Dom-Jacob dynamic, I totally understood. But when you factor in there's a third sibling here, and you're barely giving it any weight.
Yep.
You know, but she does.
It seems like Letty's more of a sister to Dom.
Yeah, because they don't kiss, do they? Do they ever kiss Letty and Dom?
No. Very rarely.
No, they have in the past, but theirs is a very chastely represented relationship.
I know. I was a little bit weirded out because I couldn't quite tell if like Letty was not into this life they were leading. And I think, June, you kind of hit the nail on the head.
Wait, you couldn't tell? She wasn't into it.
Okay, yeah.
She says specifically, we don't hide.
Well, but
she's like pissed.
But
I hate your son.
Well, she has that line where she says, "I just remembered who I was, and then our whole lives changed." Basically,
right?
She had amnesia.
Right.
Let's not forget.
I did forget.
She just had amnesia.
Yeah.
And so, just when she remembered who she was, came back into the fold, they basically stopped doing adventures, and he has a son now.
I mean, it's pretty wild.
Did she just come back into the fold in the last movie? Or the one
movie
before?
Prior. Okay. Before, the movie prior, she is like, oh, Letty's back.
And she was a bad guy.
She was the bad guy. She was on Decker's brothers. She was on Statham's brother's team. The other Shaw.
Did the other Shaw die? Did they kill him?
No, he's alive still, too. He's
in
a little
prison.
Fucked up.
Owen's
in prison.
I think he's in prison.
He was
and the sister.
Good guy, too.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what happened to the sister.
And Jason Statham, I thought the last time we saw Jason Statham, he was walking into a prison, like a narrow corridor, and all those guns were pointed at him. But he's out now, as we see in the post.
Wait, is that the end of Hobbs and Shaw, you mean?
Oh, they put him in jail in the end? Oh, no, that was the bad guy in Hobbs and Shaw, right? But they put Idris Elba in that prison.
I believe so.
Okay,
yes.
The walk. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, when we see, you know, basically, you know, Justice for Han, we get to see a snippet of what that's going to look like in the next movie, which is Han shows up to Jason Statham's house, and Jason Statham is like chasing down someone for a micro with a mini hard drive. The best reveal of all time. Jason, you missed the great thing, Adam. Jason Statham is punching a boxing bag.
We don't know it's Statham at first. It's a guy in like a hood, like punching a punching bag.
And you think, okay, who's this villain that's training to like defeat the crew? Pop, 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 pop. He's beating up baby. Then he takes off his hood, reveals it's Jason Statham. You're like, oh my God, I thought he couldn't contractually be in this because they all hate each other. And you're excited, and he drinks a bit of water. And then all of a sudden you hear like, and you're like, what? And you realize that the punching bag actually has a human being in it. And that's how Jason Statham gets his workout done.
Oh my God.
He puts,
the punching bag, like, I don't know, does he unzip himself or does Statham unzip him?
Statham does.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's pretty
and
wild.
Who's in there?
Just a random guy.
Yeah.
Just a guy.
Okay. Oh my God. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't supposed to recognize.
No, and then he's like, I got the micro hard drive here. Everything's on little.
It's weird though that guy doesn't make a peep. Until he's like unzipped.
Yeah, well, he's knocked out. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then knock, knock, knock on the door. The door opens, and who is it? It's Han eating out of a bag of chips, and he sees Shaw blackout. That's all we get to see.
And Statham looks shocked and scared or nervous he had
shit.
No idea.
No, that was odd choice too, because Statham is a guy who kills so many people that for him to like, he's having like a Bucky Winter Soldier moment of like, oh my God, my past is coming to haunt me. But he never seems to be that upset about like I almost wanted the end of the movie to be like, oh shit, Han's here, and he goes to throw a punch, and Han goes to throw a punch, and then the punches hit together like Rocky, and it's like boom, coming, you know, like
amazing.
But I mean, I don't want them to fight because I want them to get on with each other. But it seems like the way that they brought Han back and the way that Jason Statham's in the franchise, they're gonna become fast friends. Like I think they're all gonna understand.
Fast and Furious friends.
Yeah,
is that the next movie? Is that they're. I mean, have they shot it or are they shooting
There's
it now?
There's two more, 10 and 11, all just directed by Justin Lin. He's going to finish out this 11 film series. And they're building, I think, to this final. This is all. I guess what I would say about this is we know that Cypher's alive. So that's a big thing. But it didn't end on the cliffhanger that I thought it was going to end on, because it feels like we got two more movies to lead into. I felt like it was going to be like a trilogy here. It doesn't feel like it's ending on a trilogy note. It felt pretty finite.
Mr. Nobody is still missing.
Got it.
So that's left out there. Charlize, Cypher is still out there, and I believe is the most compelling villain the series has ever established.
Yeah, she's
great. I think she is the most capable and the most impressive in terms of like scale, scope, vision. Like she is like a super villain versus everybody else. Like when it comes down to it in this movie, like the Vin Diesel, John Cena, like petulant brother fight that's at the center of this movie where they have an argument like teenagers in front of like John Cena's whole military. Like they storm in and they're like, Dad liked you better. Dad didn't want you to. And they have like a whiny brother fight, which was hilarious. But all the other villains have like personal agendas. And Charlize is like a big world brain thinker.
Yes.
And that's where I hope this goes. I hope that this turns into something where, because I would love a movie where, because I think both of the movies that Charlize has been in so far, she has expertly done an incredible amount of incredible work in very short spurts.
Yeah, you want more of her.
She's basically only on the plane in the last one, and she's basically only in the box in this one. Very small presence, but I would love Charlize driving. I would love Charlize in it.
You know she can.
In it more.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
like that,
yeah.
That would be exciting to me.
I also want to see...
Fighting, all of it.
I want to see Dom reach that level of, like, acting, too. That one moment I love, I'm going to turn down my mic volume here, where he goes, I showed you mercy! Like, that one moment
was crazy.
It was a real, like, it was... Like a very Pacino-esque move. It was like, we're going toe-to-toe here. And it's like, I'm bringing it up.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
But they had to turn down his mic, too.
Now that we've gotten a brother, like, who else do you want to see enter this world?
The two moms.
I think so. Or like the dad is still alive. Dad, Mr. Nobody also saved the dad.
Well, the dad having to kill himself. I mean, the dad, again, anything can happen.
Mr. Nobody is the dad.
Whoa.
Plastic surgery.
Giselle is primed for a comeback. She is so primed for a comeback.
I will say that they've done such a good job making Giselle. The heartbreak of Hans' story is the loss of Giselle.
Yeah.
So to have her come back, that would be interesting. I would like that if they were going to then spin Giselle and Han off into something else.
I love it, like a Bonnie and Clyde.
You know, because I loved her character. I loved Giselle. I thought that was an incredible character. But it's so inextricably woven into like Han's story that I almost feel like to introduce it, just have her back would be great. But I would then want there to be a spin-off movie that is Han and Giselle adventures.
I would watch the two of them in like a globe-trotting sexy spy thriller. That would be so fun.
By the way, I'm in Spy Racers, the Fast and Furious cartoon, just FYI.
Whoa!
Yeah, no big deal. It's on Netflix.
That's great.
I play a government agent.
What do you play?
I was a government agent in one of them. So there's four seasons on Netflix.
What?
Yeah, there's four seasons.
Really? Never even... Is it like Dom and the whole gang are in it?
It's more like the kids. It's like Fast and Furious kids.
So it's like Muppet Babies Furious?
It's called Spy Racers.
That's awesome.
And I'm a colonel on a military base. I know we have to get going here, but I'm going to just quickly, obviously we had an opinion about this film, but there are people out there with a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. I need a second opinion.
And these simply are the best opinions we could find. Nate Kiley did an amazing job here, but these are 10-star reviews from IMDb, and I'm just going to rock them out here. Damn! Fast 9 was awesome and fantastic. I love John Cena playing the brother of Dominic Toretto and Mia Toretto. I can't wait to see it again. I'm so excited for the next Fast 10 and Fast 11 for the final chapter. I would say chapters. This one is from Fisher. Goes, geez, these ones and twos out of 10 are a bit harsh. We all know this franchise has evolved, and if you don't like the direction it's gone in, don't bother watching. You're never going to be the godfather of Oscars-wise. Everyone knows this. You watch it for the action, the camaraderie, and the laughs. I gave it a 10 to even out the average, so people don't see it as a 5 and then don't watch it. If Fast films aren't your bag, watch something else. I doubt the cast read these reviews, but if they do, thank you. This is a really good feel-good delight. And then... And then this one was the final one here. This one is like, so what? They went to space. This movie was never about street racing, but you casuals keep on yapping and crying about it. Nah. When will it be about racing? Shut the fuck up. Limited casual fans. They use cars to do the heist, and even Brian said to Dom in the first movie they couldn't make that kind of money just by doing street racing. But haters gonna hate. No matter how many movies they made, I'll always be excited for the new movie because this movie isn't about thinking. It's about fun. 10 stars. Go, the She-Hulk.
Wow. I would have to disagree. I think the Fast and Furious was very much about street racing.
Oh, yes. It's been about street racing throughout.
Yeah.
Almost every movie, maybe with the exception of this one, has had a I guess this one had a street race for the brothers.
Yeah, that was,
you know,
they were kind of doing world building
to
shit.
Banish the brother. But there's always been a street race, usually. Oh, and a like location that is street race based.
Yeah.
You know, where there seems to be hundreds of people know to show up to show off their cars, usually under a bridge or something like that.
Like in the middle of Paris or Bulgaria or anywhere they go.
Party.
Yeah.
It's like a party with cars and racing. And I don't know, have you guys ever come across that in your lives?
Nope. Not
and once. By the way, they shot that right. They shot that right
June,
across.
June, you were part of a street racing scene, weren't you, in New York back in the day?
Well, you know, it was a brief period. It was a dark time. It was a really dark time.
June, we shot Black Monday next to the scene where Dom and Jacob have their fight over that bridge. That like I was there late.
Oh,
night.
Yeah,
I was there
yeah.
all. But I never saw. Yeah. Straight, never saw straight bridge. Yeah.
Yes, that bridge. But I've never seen. I've never seen any street racing.
I want to just say one thing before we say what we want people to check out. And this is well, first of all, let me say one thing. If you haven't watched it yet, when they go to Tokyo, please watch Jordana Brewster's work with chopsticks in the ramen bowl. She does everything she can not to eat out of the ramen bowl. I was so enamored with the movement. It's like, I guess in Two and a Half Men, they would always eat pizza with like a knife and fork, and there's weird stuff. They're watching her with the ramen bowl. Like June and I screamed because when she finally did eat a shrimp, you were on the edge of your seat. When is she going to eat something here? It was really, really well done. So watch the ramen bowl if you've not watched it yet.
Do you think it was because she didn't want to have to keep eating all night while they shot the scene?
Yes.
Or she was just avoiding? Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like it's like, who wants to eat broth all night? Like
all night.
Ramen.
I was also
ramen.
Just like, can we let these two women sit down with like a beer?
Yeah.
Like, why do we have to have them sitting down with these giant bowls?
Black Widow did it. Black Widow, they just drank some beers in a roadside cafe. Like, you need that. You need those moments. Would we recommend this movie? I feel like across the board we're saying yes, right? I mean, but
yeah.
I don't want to speak put.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
100%.
A blast. And a much needed, fun summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
This has the feel of a spectacle-laced blockbuster. And I thought I really enjoyed it.
Again,
having watched them all just recently, there are some duds in there. There's some duds along the way, and they really have in this last batch really found a way to tell these stories in inventive, practical ways. There's a lot of practical stuff in here. There's obviously a ton of CGI as well, and it doesn't make sense, but there's a lot of fun practical effects that look great, and it's a blast to watch. So, absolutely, I recommend it.
All right. Adam, anything you want to tell people to check out while we're here?
I'm jumping into How Did This Get Made, coming up F9, The Fast Saga. We're going to be talking about that.
And where can people get that?
You just go to any podcast app, really. Apple Podcasts.
Great. What's a podcast? Oh, how do I get that?
Oh.
Is that's on the internet?
Well, I don't.
We'll put some notes in the show notes. We'll put the how to get it on the show notes.
Yeah, where and how and all that stuff.
That'd be great.
Find it there in the notes. And I'm just really excited to do it. I've been doing these for a few years now, jumping in with Paul, June, and Jason, talk about the Fast and Furious movies. Can't wait.
That's exciting.
That's a great opportunity for you, Adam.
Thank you.
Really,
yeah,
really
I'm excited,
really fun.
Like I said.
I'm excited. I'll be honest. I'm excited to check it out.
Oh,
I love podcasts.
Yeah.
And I
it's
love
really
Fast
good.
And Furious movies, too.
Yeah, we talk about Fast and Furious movies.
That's great. I love those movies, and I love podcasts, so I can't wait to check out this app.
Cool. Any podcast app, you find it anywhere.
Anywhere. Subscribe and like.
Yeah, hit the subscribe button.
All right, great. June, anything you want to mention?
Yes, everyone check out The Deep Dive, which is a new podcast I'm hosting with Jessica St. Clair. We do not talk about movies. And I'll leave it at that.
But I would say that there's a lot of talk about family and the emotional depths.
That's true.
I mean, yeah, you know, a lot of
and
Toretto.
You guys are also covering all of the Fast and Furious movies from a family perspective, right?
Yes, it's woven in. It's woven in. It's indirect.
Yeah. And Jason, anything?
Steve Conrad, who created one of my favorite recent shows, Patriot, and also Perpetual Grace Limited, has a new stop motion animation show coming out on the 22nd called Ultra City Smiths. That I have a small part that I do a voice in. And then, as always, I'll recommend Invincible to everybody, the animation show on Amazon based on the Robert Kirkman comic book that I think is fantastic.
I've heard that's terrific.
It's really, really great. You can always check out Black Monday, which is ending its season right now. You can go back and binge them all. You can go download Showtime. I think you have 7 days for free. You could probably watch every every episode of the first three seasons in one whole chunk. If you wanted to do it in over 7 days, I think you could. Also to check out what's going on over at Twitch at twitch.tv/friendzone. It's just a streaming video thing in Fast 9. There's more to say, I'm sure. So without any further ado, see you all next week. Bye for now. Doing all of our amazing research, but thanks to our super producer Cody Fisher, our engineer Devin Bryant, our MVP Molly Reynolds, our MVP squared July Diaz, and everybody who helps put the show together over at Earwolf. We couldn't do it without you, and we couldn't do it without the amazing artwork that we get from Zach McAleese, aka the ghost of Craig T. Nelson on Instagram, and also Kyle Waldron. So you can check that out on all of our social platforms. Keep the conversation going by jumping into our mini episodes, and you can always give us a call about your life or about this movie at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. That's a lot of information, but I know you can handle it. We'll see you next week for a mini episode. You can talk to us all about Fast 9. There's more to say, I'm sure. So without any further ado, see you all next week. Bye for now.